Hey there. Ever wonder what happens to all those amazing screenplays that never make it to the big screen? Well, wonder no more. Welcome to Table Read Podcast, where we bring those undiscovered gems to life. Picture this, talented actors giving incredible performances with the occasional laugh or blooper thrown in, produced by award-winning pros. From drama to comedy, TV pilots to feature films, there's something for everyone. And guess what? We release new episodes every week, so don't forget to hit that subscribe button. Table Read Podcast, where great stories finally get their chance to shine.
I can't visualize how big the ham sandwich is.
It's the IGN UK podcast, and I'm Simon Cardy, and welcome to my fun hour with Joe Screbbles.
Hello. You wanted to say and welcome to the IGN UK podcast again after just saying
I just said and welcome, and then I completely blanked and thought, I don't know what I'm going to say next. For some reason, the next word that came into my head was fortress, and I was like, I don't know where I'd
welcome
go from
there. Welcome to the fortress.
Fortress of fun with Joe Screbbles and Matt Pursley.
Hello.
Do you want to be in the fortress?
Not really, no.
I'm battlements at best, so I can throw myself off if I need to.
Raise the portcullis, for we have lots of chat to talk through.
If this is this week's metaphor, I will lose my fucking mind. I hated listening back to those last week. The dinner.
The
banquet of shite.
You would have a banquet in like a castle or fortress, though, wouldn't you, traditionally?
I would red wedding your asses out if you started doing that again.
Okay, well, do you know what have a lot of fortresses in? The Elder Scrolls game, owned by Bethesda, who are now owned by Microsoft.
Well, technically, Bethesda's owned by ZeniMax Media, owned by Xbox.
Yeah, and no one cares about that
itself is also owned by Microsoft. The chain continues.
My word. That was a big bit of news, wasn't it?
I love that Microsoft has managed to leak every single announcement they've wanted to make this year, including other people's, and this didn't leak. It's amazing. Yeah. I mean that in a genuine way. This was, despite the fact that it like completely derailed my day because of work, like, what an amazing thing to just be able to drop out of the sky the day before your pre-orders open. Like, it's fantastic.
So I remember when I first heard of it, I thought, oh, is someone leaked something, or is there a rumour that they're thinking of doing it? No, they've just tweeted, we've done it. It's happened.
See ya. Although, technically, they haven't, which is weird. Like, I don't know enough about business to know if it's normal to say we are going to buy you for $7.5 billion next year. But it feels like the agreements are done, and now it's just like the machinery clicks into place and everything goes ahead for the next year. But that was one thing where I kind of wrote, my Xbox buys Bethesda. And then you look into it, you're like, no, Xbox buys Bethesda in a year. Did you see the amazing stat about it? You know, they spent $7.5 billion on it. And in the last, I think it's in the last console generation, maybe shorter, Sony's operating profit has been $8.8 billion. So it's like the numbers involved here are absolutely astonishing. Like,
it's a big risk. Is it a risk with a company like ZeniMax and Bethesda? Like, their games are gonna sell, aren't they?
Well,
but
yeah,
7.5. I always think with deals with numbers, it's just hard to quantify, isn't it? With numbers that big, like, how are you making that money back?
Sorry, there's a bin truck outside my house and it's loud. I don't know what the profit figures are for Microsoft, but I know that I looked and Microsoft made last year as a whole $126 billion. So, like, in terms of what $7.5 billion means to this company, I don't think it's huge. Like, they even said in their press release, we'd expect this to have minimal impact on our income reports next year and the year after. And you're like, okay, so that gives you some sense of this isn't a deal made necessarily with the idea of, like, we've got to make our money back. Like, this has got to work for us. Like, as much as anything else, this is in the short term, it's basically a fuck you to Sony. Like, they don't have to do this, but they can. And in the long term, yes, they probably will make that money back. It's just going to be 10 years, not 1 year. You know, like, I think this is a vision for the future, and yeah, as much as anything else, it's literally just a PR stunt. It's a $7.5 billion PR stunt.
It's quite funny to think, isn't it? Because it was only like probably about 2 months ago when Obsidian teased what was their new like Skyrim RPG. Mm-hmm. Avowed, and everyone's like, "Oh, there's Microsoft Skyrim," and now they've basically got Skyrim and the next.
I think probably the deal there, right, is that they've had Obsidian for a while, and they probably were putting together that company as a competitor to Bethesda, mm-hmm. and then just a few months after all of that business was kind of put into action, I presumably the opportunity to buy this company turns up, and it's like, well, we might as well have the entire market share of first-person fantasy adventures.
Yeah, Ryan McCaffrey wrote a sort of five biggest takeaways thing, and he's absolutely right. Like, Microsoft now is essentially the home of Western RPGs.
I mean, it's like, the home of big-budget Western RPGs. Let's not pretend they've got, like, Larian or Zaum or the actual good RPGs from the West.
But, you know, but, like, the stuff people buy. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like, those are great RPGs, and I love them. But if we're talking about, like, I've got mates who play FIFA and COD, but they play Skyrim, you mm-hmm. know?
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. we're at that level. And, like, to think of Bethesda, Obsidian in Exile, like, all of these people working under one banner is absolutely ludicrous, which is why everyone's asking for Fallout New Vegas 2.
Yeah.
Which isn't going to happen. Don't worry about it.
What do we think this does? Because there's no solid answer yet on what this means for future Bethesda games. We still know that Deathloop and... I'm going blank. What's
Ghostwire.
The other Ghostwire. They're still PS5 exclusive. Do we know even if they're timed?
They are timed.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. But the big question is Elder Scrolls 6 and Starfield... Are those going to be Xbox only?
No one knows.
No one knows.
I'm increasingly on the side of they will be on PS5.
Yes.
I think they will be, but do you think they'll be timed? Do you think they'll just come out?
So I think this is part of, as Joe alluded to earlier, like, I think Microsoft has a long game here, and it seems to me like a very interesting long game to become not just a console kind of company, but like this much larger publisher system where they can have games that you can get very easily on an Xbox, but you can play PlayStation games that are Xbox games as well, with mm-hmm. the idea of, so let's say that The Elder Scrolls is, you know, comes out on both consoles. You can either spend £70 for it and buy it on a PlayStation, of which a tidy cut of that goes to Microsoft, or you can go out, because a lot of people that will be playing The Elder Scrolls won't have one of these consoles. The Elder Scrolls has become that thing where it's so big that people might not necessarily buy a console until that is out, and then mm-hmm. they'll be looking for a game, you know, a machine for Tez, and it's either they buy a PlayStation and spend £70 on it, or you go out and buy the Xbox that has it on Game Pass day one. Mm-hmm. So they're either going to make a tidy cut of £70, or they're going to make a console.
And presumably that means it'll come to PC day one for free as well?
Yeah,
They've said that everything's aiming for that. Mm-hmm. And like, yeah, to me, it's a matter of scale. I think the actual more interesting question, considering they've specifically said case-by-case basis for this stuff, I think the more interesting question is whether your AA games like Doom end up being Xbox exclusives now.
What, you think Doom's a AA game?
AAA versus quadruple A then. I'm talking like, if you're looking at a new mainline Fallout, mm-hmm. Elder Scrolls, mm-hmm. probably Starfield game, that is a tier above Doom in terms of value to...
Yeah, or Wolfenstein or something like that.
And like, I think there is a case to be made that those will end up being Xbox exclusives. But mm-hmm. when you get to the scale of Skyrim, you know, when you're selling 30 million copies, it's the same as Minecraft. They didn't take Minecraft off of PS4 when they bought Mojang, because it would have been insane. Mm-hmm. You just make the money out of everyone buying your game that you own. And I think that to me strikes... That strikes me as the most... like, obvious future for this stuff. I would guess there will be more multi-platform games from Bethesda than there are exclusives going mm-hmm. forward. And that's partly based on common sense and partly based on the fact that Bethesda have specifically said, we're publishing the games. So it seems like they're not Xbox game studios in the same way.
They're not being labeled, right?
Exactly. Like, all of Xbox's language is like, we now have 23 studios, but every time they've bought another studio, they're like, and these studios are Xbox game studios, whereas Bethesda is publishing their own stuff. So I think they're just going to be left to essentially be a money machine for Microsoft and work as they used to. Which I think is great
for their future. Like, I don't think Microsoft has to be massively worried about their future in terms of the amount of sheer money they make. But if there's something that I really admire about Phil Spencer's sort of like philosophy for the future of games and how he's always been quite open about it. It's not about owning an Xbox. It's about this company trying to bring as good a gaming experience they can. And obviously a certain amount of that is PR because they want to make the moolah. But there's a certain amount of stuff that he has done to back that up, which suggests that, you know, kind of like the publishing division of Xbox helped bring Ori to Switch. Mm. They've made sure that Minecraft has stayed open. I just think it makes sense to have the Xbox fingers in more pies than just their own console, like on a long-term basis.
Yeah, because they can afford to as well. You know, like, I think we've talked about this before, but Sony, to a certain extent, relies on PlayStation doing well. Microsoft does not rely on Xbox to do well. It is a feather in their cap rather than the cap itself.
It's pretty much the biggest acquisition they could have made. Like, if you think about it, like, EA probably probably bigger off the top of my head, but you're not going to buy EA, and you're not going to buy Ubisoft either. But they're probably the two other big ones off the top of my head, but... Yeah, to get a company of that size.
I honestly would have said before this happened that it was impossible that this would have happened. So it is kind of like, this is the upper end. This is absurd. And like, I know Bethesda do very well and have always done very well, but like, Todd Howard came out and said, this gives us resources we didn't have before. So if we're lucky and if the bluster is real, then, or is not bluster, then we have a version of Bethesda that can do even cooler things than it could do before. And that kind of is amazing. And as long as they don't start locking those games away, which I really don't think they will, I honestly see this as almost a pure positive. It's a very interesting and cool thing.
It's that thing we know that Bethesda Softworks have always... They've got great ideas, but their engine isn't always up to scratch for the ambition they have. If this allows The Elder Scrolls 6 to run on with tech that allows those ambitions to shine through, that's less buggy, you know, that has the level of polish that some of their other studios manage. Like, imagine the polish of Doom, but in an Elder Scrolls game. If that
said Starfield's being rebuilt in a new engine, which will mean Elder Scrolls is rebuilt in a new engine, is in that rebuilt engine as well. So as long as it's not shite, then that's very exciting.
Well, we'll see if we actually see either of those games in this console generation first.
That's true.
It's a long way away. Do you know what isn't a long way away, though?
The war.
Call of Duty. it's like we're in a constant war, doesn't it, Jay? Call of Duty,
you,
Black
personally.
Ops, Cold War. No, it's a war of wits.
Jesus.
I don't know it. It's a prestige for the 21st century.
And Matt's our Tesla.
Exactly.
I'll take the Bowie role, that's fine. I can't do Tesla's voice.
Neither could Bowie, to be fair.
Call of Duty Black Ops Cold War is the newest Call of Duty game, funny enough. And it's out in about 6 weeks now, I think. And I am reviewing the multiplayer portion of the game this year, which... is a different thing for me. Doing a review in progress is a different thing for me. So I started that at the weekend, playing the alpha, which, to be fair, isn't 100% there. Oh, I hope it isn't 100% there anyway, because I didn't have a great time with it. I don't know, did either of you get time with it?
I forgot.
I was playing it with you, Cardi.
I know, Matt, but people don't know. I was being a proxy there for the audience by asking.
I thought you'd just forgotten then, like the Cold War had infiltrated your mind.
Exactly. For a game about the Cold War, there's a lot of guns. I played a good few hours over the weekend. It's just... So historically, I've always been a fan of the warfare games, in quotation marks, over the Black Ops games. Mm-hmm. And I think that's mainly because I've always found... especially Modern Warfare 1 and 2, like, just the speed of it is more for me, and especially the time to kill. Like, being able to just run around with an SMG and get 5 kills in 10 seconds. It's just what I'm all about. You know what I mean? It's what it's all about. But in Cold War, it just felt like... I think they've deliberately made these steps to strip it back and go back to what the original Black Ops was like, with a longer time to kill and just... Just the maps feel very stripped back as well. Like, there's a lack of verticality. There's none of the recent Modern Warfare editions, like being able to mount or being able to basically jump over things or open doors. It's all very, like, lane-based maps, yeah, in a way.
It reminded me of an Xbox 360 shooter.
Yeah, you're being harsher because I'm being more diplomatic about this. But yeah, it was archaic, whereas I think they're trying to go for nostalgia. And that's a very thin line.
And you know, nostalgia, especially this year, feels like something that we all want a bit of, like escape back to the past. So I'm not a big Call of Duty player in terms of the multiplayer. I generally play the campaigns, and it's very few and far between that the multiplayer catches me, which is why Modern Warfare last year caught me off guard. Because I got really into Modern Warfare's multiplayer. Like, I loved Gunfight and, you know, Warzone came along. This one, yeah, I feel, as you say, that verticality missing, which I think Modern Warfare does really well, kind of like having lots of layers, especially when you come to Warzone. But also, it's just that feeling of running around maps just looking for someone to shoot. And I know that is a classic part of deathmatch.
It really is going back to the old school Call of Duty of basically running circles around a map and hope you run into someone before they run into you, which it is fun, but...
And that's just, probably going to do it for a lot. Like, a lot of people probably hated Modern Warfare because because it wasn't classic Call of Duty. And for some people, this is really going to work for them, I think. I think there's enough there that I saw that was like... If you are a classic COD player, I think there might be something here for you. But I'm not that classic COD player.
See, I've always preferred the shorter time to kill. Like, it's why I play a lot of the hardcore modes as well in Modern Warfare, not the core modes. So it's basically more like Siege, where it's like a couple of shots and dead. Because it just... It's always felt more satisfying to me. And it's interesting, I did a poll on my Alpha Impressions, which was... In Call of Duty, you for a longer or a shorter time to kill, and it's at the moment I think it's like 51% shorter, 49% longer, which pretty much splits it right down the middle. And I always had it in my head that people preferred the shorter time to kill, but maybe they don't.
That does interest me, because I do prefer a longer time to kill in general, but if I'm playing COD, that's not what I'm going in for by any means. Like, maybe aside from Warzone, where it's kind of the deal, but yeah, I don't. I'm surprised by that. I didn't even know you'd done that poll. I thought, that's very interesting.
There we go. Game science.
Oh, no.
But yeah, I've got mixed feelings about it so far. There are bits I enjoyed. I really enjoyed the new map, which is... It's called Armada. It's set across like 3 battleships in the middle of the ocean. It's just something different. It definitely has big Battlefield vibes, which I'm not keen on them doing, because I feel like whenever Call of Duty tries to do like ground war and tries to be Battlefield is where they fail. They should just stick to being Call of Duty. But I did like just ziplining across a boat, and especially when you can actually go underwater in between the ships and aim down sights and fire when you're underwater at people. I don't know the science behind that, but it felt good.
Yeah, like the Armada one, is there a capture point that's like half underwater and stuff in that one, or is that a different map?
So it's not half under, there's two that are like near the edge of the map, which you can capture by being underwater if you
swim. They're in, like, capsized ships.
Which does make it quite difficult as well, because you're like, who's capturing this point? And they're, like, 10 foot underwater. Like, I can't see him, so I can't shoot him. But I don't know. Mixed feelings. It's obviously still the alpha. I'll probably update it after the beta, and then, obviously, when the final game is out. But, yeah, I just... The bit I'm most intrigued by, and I don't yet know if I'm actually including this in my review or if we're doing it separately, is how they're going to integrate Warzone this year with the multiplayer. It looks like they might, from what I've heard and seen, it looks like they might be keeping Verdansk, but basically turning it back in time and dressing it up like it was the 80s with like all the old like communist banners around the city and stuff like that, which would be an interesting twist on it. It saves doing a whole new map.
I would like them to just nuke it and then we get a new map.
But I do. I know Verdansk so well though that I can actually win, so I don't want it to change.
The thing I know this is just copying another battle royale, but the thing I really like about Apex is that it now has that kind of two map deal, and they swap between seasons, and then between seasons they're different versions of that same map. Mm-hmm.
I think eventually they will have it. Next week is Season 6, actually, for Modern Warfare, and they're updating it. So the Warzone map is getting underground stations next week. It's got like 5 or 6 underground stations around the map. And it's not yet confirmed if you can actually get on the tubes and go between them, or if they're just new areas you can go down in and fight. But that's a strain. I can't wait to see what the hell's going on with that.
That'll be really weird with gas and stuff. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm not sure about that.
We'll see. It could be a new way like to enjoy war.
That sounds like an absolute death trap for when the circle's closing and you can't get out the underground.
Yeah, never
stuck
get stuck
at the ticket barrier trying to get through.
It sounds like absolute hell. And do you know where else is absolute hell?
Very good.
The setting for the game, Hades. Which is it me? Maybe it's just because for the last 3 weeks, Matt, we've been working on the Immortals Phoenix Rising stuff, but I cannot get away from Greek mythology at the moment.
It is. And actually, you know what? going and playing bits of Hades after you've played Immortals and then playing some Immortals when you've been playing some Hades, like, you get this weird kind of like twist where everything feels very, very familiar, but everything looks completely different. I like this multiple like interpretation of these characters, of which Hades is very stylish.
Yeah, if you don't know what Hades is, it's a game that's technically been out on PC, well, in early access for about 2 years now, isn't it?
Yeah, December 2018. I have had
it in my Epic Games library since it released, and I have never played it, and now everyone's telling me it's a 10 out of 10, and it's making me furious that I'm so stupid.
Got it on the... So it came out on Switch last week, and I got it, I played it, because of these recommendations from literally everyone I talked to, and I can confirm it is absolutely incredible. It is a roguelike, not only a roguelike, but I think at this point the best roguelike I've ever played. Not that I've played tons of them, they're not generally not my cup of tea. I really like Rogue Legacy, and I really like Dead Cells and a handful of others, but Hades, it's just got that, I don't know, it's hitting that sweet spot of incredible combat, incredible voice acting, incredible soundtrack, just looks incredible. It just, and
what's,
it's that perfect
the voice
difficulty level
for
all the characters.
So,
see, like, there's not much voice acting in roguelikes generally, so I'm
right. See, that's
in
what
that
makes it a cut above, I think, is that there's actually lots of story compared to your standard roguelike. And yeah, all the characters are like, it's genuinely funny as well. It's, I don't know.
It's a super giant game. It's like, it's their DNA through and through. And the best way, if you know their output, the easiest way to describe it is a roguelike version of Bastion spliced with Pyre. So each run that you do, like the actual run itself, is in a roguelike environment. It looks like Bastion, as in it's an isometric kind of top-down battler. When you die, you are returned back to the halls of Hades, which is where you get to do like the little bit more of the slightly more visual novel elements. And the amount of voice acting and the amount of dialogue that is in this game, I've done so many runs over like 2 years now, because I've been playing it over early access as well. And like, I'll dip in for each patch that they've done. I can't really think of any time I've heard the same Theo.
Exactly, because some achievements are linked, like, depending on what you do in that run as well, it changes what the conversation is. And also, yeah, to unlock some abilities, it's like, have this conversation with this person 50 times and stuff like that. And so, yeah, the general plot is that you play as Zagreus, who is the son of Hades. And you are trying to escape Hades, basically. You're trying to escape the underworld, but and you're progressing through the different layers. So your first one is Tartarus and so on. I've played a good few hours. I've done about 12 to 15 runs now, I'd say, and my last one I had a really good lucky run, and the first time I got to Elysium, which is the third area, I actually got to the end of it, but I just couldn't defeat that damn Minotaur.
You're doing pretty
well. Get that feeling?
Well, every time I go up one, like, Perseus is a bastard, isn't he?
I got a very lucky run
to get to Elysium on what I'd say like under 20 runs. I'm fairly shit at it, I'll admit. I'm not very good. Because I find the second sort of zone quite difficult, which is there's a lot of lava and there's a lot of kind of dashing over little gaps with lava, and sometimes the dash doesn't go well and I end up burning myself to death. And obviously,
you shouldn't do that. Yeah. Never run into lava.
Mm-hmm. The interesting thing, I think, is the way that you build your character across a run, because each air, like you go into a little arena, you do a fight, imagine it kind of like Doom, so you take out all the enemies, and then you're given, sometimes there's only one way to progress, but sometimes you're given an option of two or three doors, and each one of those explains to you on the sign on the door what you will get for completing the next area. So sometimes that's just a health boost, but sometimes it will let you have an encounter with a god who will then give you a boon which allows you to build out your character. So, for example, meeting Zeus will apply kind of like electric-based buffs to your weapons. Cardi, what's
Poseidon's
the...
my boy.
Yeah.
I love getting Poseidon. His abilities are good. I love getting the one where his boon, where if you dash, it moves everyone away from you with like a wave of water. Yeah. That one's really useful.
Is it Dionysus? Is that how you pronounce the god?
Dionysus, the god of wine. Yeah.
So he basically... The boon is called getting people drunk, but it's essentially poison damage over time. But a run that I did today had every time I dashed, it would leave a wave of wine, and anybody caught in that would just get poisoned. So it's just dashing around arenas, basically not having to attack anyone, because every time they walk near me, they gradually disintegrate in red wine.
That sounds like the best death I can ever imagine.
Like, you will... I know you haven't played it yet, Joe, but I know that you'll love this game.
It's weird because I've actually looked so little at it that I only really know it through descriptions, but it ticks so many boxes for me.
Yeah, it's so good.
And you talking about the kind of the gradual improvement outside of skill is something I quite like. I know that's a kind of in the roguelite community, that's a bone of contention a lot of times. Like, some people just want to kind of Spelunky, like, I guess, or I guess Binding of Isaac, where it's like each run is its own bespoke time and then you earn bits and pieces but not like improvement. Yeah. But I always liked, like, Rogue Legacy did it.
It's definitely
quite
closest
well
to Rogue Legacy for me, which is that constant improvement, and it's also similar to Rogue Legacy, whereas it's by no means an easy game, but it's not brutally hard ever, which is good. That's what kind of put me off Dead Cells. There are times I found it a bit unfair, but this is constantly... It's never unfair, the amount of enemies it's putting on screen or how difficult they are.
Yeah, and that sense of improvement that you get, obviously you're improving throughout the run because you're meeting all of these gods who are not only telling you the story, but also giving you cool stuff. And you're earning money to spend at kind of like the Stygian Boatman and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But in between your runs, because you're earning things, you earn like darkness, which is a currency, and you earn keys, which will unlock new weapons. You're actively making a choice how you're building the meta of your runs rather than just the micro elements. And you know how kind of in Dead Cells, you gain items which would be in when you'd be reborn. There's all of those like vials on the wall, isn't there, and hanging jars that they put stuff in. But you never feel like you've necessarily got full control of what's in those. It's just things that you found about the way. When you come back from a run of Hades, you are choosing where you want to put those resources. And so you have a lot more control than you typically have, I think, in a roguelite.
Yeah, and I've also got it. I've got Death Defiance, I think. And I've got the Lucky Tooth, which is a very useful
that's very
piece of equipment
cool.
to have. It means when I die now, I think up to three times I can revive with health.
Oh,
so.
Wow.
That's good.
Very pleasant.
Yes. And I'm currently... The spear is my favourite weapon so far. You start off with a sword and then you quickly unlock others. There's a shield, a bow and a spear. And then I'm almost about to unlock the fists, which I'm not... I've deliberately not looked up a lot about this game. I don't know what they do. So I kind of enjoy just discovering it all by myself rather than looking up, you know, best way to play Hades.
you know what the other weapon is beyond the fists, right?
I deliberately haven't looked, no.
Right, okay. So when they added that in early access, that was kind of like a, holy shit, this changes the game. that's the thing. Each of the weapons feels really unique because they have completely different fighting styles. But there are things that it does where, be that a build that you create when you learn sort of like how to stack those boons, or just using a different item or a different weapon, it makes it feel remarkably different despite the fact you're doing the same stuff.
Yeah, God, it's so good. And I cannot state this enough. The music is incredible.
It's because Darren Korb's
a genius.
And that
is almost definitely... Yeah, yeah, and that is what we will be playing at the end of this podcast. It's already been decided. Joe, yeah? There's probably a reason you haven't played Hades, because you've been playing another game.
I thought you were going to do the segue based on the music. Paradise Killer.
I didn't.
Paradise Killer.
We had one Alicia Judge on a couple of weeks who would not stop talking about this game, frankly. I wonder why.
Almost like she's in it.
He's in it, yeah.
Paradise Killer is... Matt's been playing this as well, but it's one of the most bizarre games I can remember playing for a long time, and in a very good way. So, Cardi, how much do you actually know about it?
I know that there's been a murder on this paradise place, in quotation marks, and that you are sent there as a detective, essentially, to work out who did it, mm-hmm. and that there is no actual definitive answer to this question, and you just have to work it out as you go, basically.
Yeah.
And even the developers say they're not going to tell you.
Yeah.
From what Alicia said, anyway.
There is...
basically, I know what Alicia told me.
Yeah. There is a definitive story behind the game that I think you can work out, but there are interpretations to be had within it. But... do you know how weird it is? Like, how creepy and bizarre.
I watched a trailer. Yeah. So I didn't, until I watched that trailer, I knew it was open world. I didn't realize it was a proper 3D open world, because the only art I'd seen was like the cartoon drawings.
So it's built along
so confused.
It's built along the ideas of like a Phoenix Wright or a Danganronpa mystery visual novel, but it's kind of exploded into a 3D exploration game set across an open world that you can go in any direction at any time, and you kind of have to learn to get around. And the thing that really caught me off guard, because I knew that going in, but I didn't realize like that a key element to me of this game is like you are a detective and people work like people. They are humans by and large. They will speak to you like a normal person. They'll lie to you like a normal person. It feels like a detective story. But the rules of the world are so bonkers and so opaque until you've worked them out. So, like, ghosts exist. So, like, how does the existence of ghosts change being a detective solving a murder?
You can just talk to them and say you did it.
But this is... So you come... it's not even... It's not that simple, obviously, because that would be very stupid. But, like, that does have a bearing. And, like, it's a world that is constantly being assaulted by demons from beyond the stars. And, like, so that's a whole part of the history. And so you're kind of building through... You're coming at this story from, like, after the fact. There has been a murder. By the way, to tell you how the game starts, you know, like, Alicia explained to you that you get called back to the island, right? Mm. Your character, Lady Love Dies, has been exiled for 3 million days on a mile-high plinth above a series of islands that have been created to ritually sacrifice kidnapped humans to cosmic gods, right? That's the basics. And when you're called back, the opening of the game is you skydiving off of the mile-high plinth to the island while the opening credits play. It's fucking amazing.
That does sound very good.
like, it's got this, like, this tropical island vibe, but the cool thing, I think, is, like, yeah, you're building a case after the fact, but you're also world building after the fact. You're understanding what the fuck this place is and like what this reality is and who these horrible immortal people you work for are.
I knew it was odd. I didn't know it was quite this odd. And I've got a long weekend this weekend. I think
so
I may have to.
Weird. It's brilliant. Like, and it's genuinely the most sort of unique game world I can remember being in. I don't know, for ages.
What is it on at the moment?
It's
is
on
it just piece?
Switch, and it's on...
Oh, it is on Switch.
Yeah,
okay.
It's perfect for Switch as well.
Nice.
Oh, it's just, yeah, it's great. And, like, and that's not to say that, you know, that's not to mention, I should say, that, like, it is a 3D exploration game. You jump around, you earn abilities to get around more easily, you fast travel around the island, all this stuff. But it builds up to the trial at the end of the game, which is kind of like... It's not an ending, it's like a culmination. You take all your stuff and then you choose who to accuse. This isn't giving stuff away, it's the structure of the game. Like, and you could start that trial at any time. It's like Dragon's Dogma. Like, you can, in Dragon's Dogma, you can do the final boss battle at the start of the game. And in this, if you wanted a shit ending, you could go and do the trial at the start of the game. And I just love this, like, this idea that you're creating your own story and then presenting it at the end based on what you think. And you can also, like, purposely get it wrong if you want to save certain characters and keep them there at the end. So if you want to be a corrupt detective, you can also do that.
I'm into it. I've always enjoyed a bit of Danganronpa, and I feel like this is a nice little filler for it. I don't know. I was looking for a word that I completely forgot.
See, I've never played a Danganronpa game, but I've seen they just look too fucked up and odd for me. Whereas
yeah, you like Paradise Killer.
It sounds like, but Paradise Killer mixed with Persona.
But Paradise Killer, I think, is fucked up in the right sort of way. Like, it's weird and it's cosmic and it's... It reminds me a little bit of, like, have either of you read Saga?
No, I haven't actually.
So Saga has got this just bizarre, like, cosmic universe, and it's like if Saga was dialed up to 11, basically. It's a little bit like what this is. And I like kind of, like, it's both quite Western but very Japanese influenced as well. Like, it's, there's a certain amount of Britishness to it, not to mention about the fact that, like, I think everybody in it is British or voiced by British people. But yeah, it's kind of got this thing, like, the most recent person I met, I think she's called Crimson Acid, but she's just got a goat, she's got a goat's head, like, this fairly voluptuous woman who's got a goat's head, and she sells me secrets that she's learned if I give her pieces of blood. So that's,
I'm definitely gonna check this out.
Yeah, it's and so, like, as Joe said, it's so opaque at the start. I had no idea what was going on. I'm not used to having games normally have, like, a little bit of world building at the start to explain to you about the lore. This doesn't have that, and the delight of it is working out what is going on here. And each of the characters are an absolute blast to kind of chat to, because they're all so mad.
You've obviously finished it, Joe. Did you feel, when you were at the end point, did you feel like you had fully worked it out?
I think I made one mistake in my ending. But also, I kind of love that that happened, because I had an idea of what it should be, and then I think I got one thing wrong, and that kind of cascades through the rest of my conclusions, where I'm like, well, if that was wrong, then I'm not entirely sure how that fit in. And the fact that it ended on this moment of, like, I made all my decisions and I got it a bit wrong, the way it presents it to you, I kind of didn't care. Like, it wasn't, I didn't want to go and go back to my save and redo it, because I fucked
you didn't
up,
care that you convicted an innocent person.
I don't know if they were innocent. I just don't, I think they might have been innocent of the specific thing I was accusing them of.
Okay.
But, like, that's what I love about it, is that I can't, so I've written a review for this, which will go up at some point. And kind of part of it is me sort of wrapping my head around the idea of, like, detectives are all about proof, but actually they're not about proving things in a court of law. They're just about presenting all the evidence and saying, like, that's probably the proof. And I think Paradise Killer gets that idea more than anything else. Like, the detective can be wrong, but they can have come up, they can have come up with a perfect reason that happens to be wrong. And I think that's a really cool way to do a detective.
I kind of like that. It's a bit like the, I don't know if you played, they must be like 10 years old now. There were the Sherlock Holmes games where there was like 5 cases in each story, and you could actually get those wrong.
Yeah. Wasn't it's it not Crimes, really Sherlock Crimes Holmes, and Punishments, like, that was the one where you could get stuff specifically wrong?
I remember the silver earring, I think it was.
So in Crimes and Punishments, one of the cases, one of the potential suspects, who's quite clearly not the suspect, is a young boy with learning disabilities, to which I was so stumped on the entire thing that I couldn't think of anybody else who it could have been. So I thought they'd pinned it on this boy, and I just sent this boy to jail and probably to hang.
God.
And it definitely wasn't him.
Yeah, you shouldn't play Danganronpa or all this, because you're just convicting innocent people left, right, and centre for the fun of it. Last question about Paradise Killer, Joe. How long, roughly, would you say, did it take you anyway? Because I know it could literally take you, by the sounds of it, 10 minutes if you wanted.
Yeah, I wasn't... I'm not totally clear on how long it took me, because I played it in, like, tiny bursts a lot. I would estimate around 15 hours.
Like, okay,
the exploration portion is, like, the bulk. The trials may be an hour and a half if you've got a lot. If you went in with no evidence, it would be over in no time. But yeah, once you're kind of towards having cleaned up, the island. Like, yeah, you're looking at about an hour and a half.
I think I'd be tempted to do that once I played it through once. Just go start a new game and go straight to the trial and see what happens.
I do kind of want to see. Like, I don't know how it would reckon with it, and I can't really say why without ruining the structure of why the trial works, but I think it would be interesting to see. But yeah, man, what a cool game, and it just kind of came out of nowhere. And to the point that started all of this, the soundtrack is fucking astonishingly good. Like, it's like vaporwave and Japanese city pop and like a bit of reggae and jazz and like really odd business. It's
and the visuals match that so well, because that sort of whole vaporwave thing about where that was very influenced by 90s and all of that weird shit you used to find on like car boot markets at computer sellers that have got, I've got this weird CD and it has a 3D sort of skull that will float on your monitor when you watch it that's covered in jewels and bright pink lights and stuff like that. It's it reminds me of like the game Born from the World that had the weird dancing baby.
Yes, absolutely. Kind of like, did you play Hypnospace Outlaw?
Yes.
Like a game based on the idea that the internet never went past GeoCities. That was good. Also a detective game. But the what I really like about this soundtrack is it does the same thing as the visuals in the game. Like, it matches them perfectly, not just in look and feel, but in tone, because they are tonally wrong for the disgusting stuff that you're uncovering. And so, like, it has this added creepiness of, like, this is way too happy. There is a song called Leaving on there that I cannot stop listening to. It's all on Bandcamp, actually, and you can get it. But holy shit, Leaving is just a straight-up banger. It's also by a guy called Barry Topping, who does a podcast called Two Good Boys, which is filth and is one of my favourite things. So if you're looking for an infrequent dose of filth from Scottish men, oh my God, Two Good Boys
look
is well
no further. There we go. Matt, before we go on to the thing you're currently reviewing, breaking news I've just seen pop up in our Slack channel, Joe. They're making a Yakuza film.
Yes. I went silent for a bit because I was making sure someone was writing that up.
Just a brief bit about that. A, that sounds amazing. Yeah. B, I hope they don't just make it proper serious. I hope it's just really weird and just like people hitting people with bikes.
It needs to be, the entire thing needs to be a serious chat about who's going to inherit a car park and they're going to beat each other to death with sticks over it and traffic cones and then maybe and a concrete donkey will land on them.
I just saw that pop up and I thought, I want to see that.
Yeah, that would be pretty interesting. I want to see if he hits people with bikes. But yeah, that would be good.
Does anyone get hit with a bike in Utopia, Matt?
No. I say this, I have not been allowed to watch the last episode yet, so maybe someone does get hit by a bike in the last episodes. Who knows?
To make it clear to everyone, this is the US remake of about a 10-year-old UK program by now.
It was 2013.
There we go.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, Utopia came out in 2013 over here as a Channel 4 show created and written by a guy called Dennis Kelly. And there is now a US remake on Amazon that has been put together by Gillian Flynn of Gone Girl fame.
They are remaking it despite never finishing the original.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
the original had two seasons and finished on a fairly major cliffhanger. Who knows what they'll do with this. But it's a US remake that features probably in terms of its biggest stars is there's John Cusack in there, who is very good. He plays like a pharmaceutical kind of boss who's wrangled up in a pandemic that breaks out. Tell you what, watching a show about a big pandemic, a bit awkward at this point, but I'll let them off. It actually adds like a layer of paranoia to it that the show doesn't actually manufacture itself, because despite the fact it's set in that situation, it's not really interested in talking about like the effects of pandemics. It's all about a conspiracy behind a viral outbreak. So like, nobody's wearing masks, no one's social distancing. It's got jack all to do with that. And then there's Rainn Wilson, who's in it. We all like a bit of him, and he plays a virologist that's caught up in all of this. but the main storyline is to do with basically a group of comic book nerds that have become obsessed with a comic book called Dystopia, and they've learned that there is an unreleased sequel to it called Utopia. And they desperately want this comic book because this group have discovered that in Dystopia, it basically predicted loads of pandemics, so like Ebola outbreaks and stuff like that. So they want to know what's in this one. Turns out an awful lot of other people want that unreleased comic. And so when they get their hands on it, they become sort of like hunted down by shadowy forces. And it creates this kind of... It's built very much like, you know, like a puzzle box style TV show. We get loads of them where it never tells you what the fuck's going on, but you gradually have to just go with it, even though you don't know where the end point is. Utopia is quite good at pulling back the curtain just enough at key episodes. Like by the time you get to the halfway point, you know enough that it doesn't feel frustrating that you don't know where the end goal is. So it's good at that.
Does it follow quite closely the plot of the original?
The stuff about kind of the comic book group side of it. So that's like Becky, Ian, Grant, the little kid, and Jessica Hyde, who is kind of like the linchpin of all of this. That's very close to the original British TV show. The stuff that's about what is called The Harvest in the US remake, which was known as The Network before, which are the forces that are chasing them, that's quite different in the US version.
Okay.
There is a pharmaceutical company in the British version. It's not the same company. The goals are different. Having not done the final episode, I don't know where it's going to end, but the path it's treading makes it feel like it's still going for the same end goal. It will just arise in a different fashion.
Yeah. So I remember watching the original. I can't remember. I think I watched season one. Mm-hmm. I remember enjoying it. I don't know if I ever watched season two, and then it got cancelled, so I think I never bothered catching up because I thought, well, it didn't end, so yeah. What's the point?
I can see what you would do. So I didn't watch the UK one again purposefully because I remember it being astonishingly good, and I didn't want to change my judgment of the US one. I needed to review it on its own terms. So I watched it all the way through, and then I wrote my review. And then yesterday, I watched the entirety of season one of Utopia UK in one sitting. It's one of those things where the UK one blows the US one out of the water, basically. And I think that the US one is a decent remake. But when I've watched the UK one, there are certain things about the UK version that are so much better. Principally the main cast. Like, I think the stuff that's on the side of the core comic book nerds in the US one are good. Like, Rainn Wilson is excellent, and Cusack's is great. And there's also, if you remember, there's a hitman called Arby.
Yeah.
So he's quite good in the US one. They play him up to be a bit more childlike. Like, they have segments where he's just in this little box room watching cartoons, eating raisins. And you see, like, oh, okay, he's an assassin that has been kept very childlike so that he can be a tool. He's not as childlike in the UK one.
No, he's quite quiet and threatening.
Yeah.
He's played by, I always forget the guy's name, but he's the guy who's in Kill List who... Mm-hmm. And I love that film so much. But
Neil Maskell or something like that?
That sounds close.
Yeah.
If not right.
And like the US one he is a good character in that, and I like him a lot, but the UK one is much better. But it's like the core cast of nerds in the US one, they're all just flat and boring, and nothing changes about them, despite the fact they're going through this horrendous conspiracy. And like their lives are being, you know, disassembled by forces that are much greater than them. And it's just like, they're just boring all the way through it. And I know they're supposed to be everymen, and that's supposed to be the point of it. They're just people off the street that got in over their heads. But they're just not compelling enough. Aside from, they do put an original character into that group called Sam, who is played by the girl that is the lead in Happy Death Day. If you've watched that.
I've not seen it.
Death Day is an absolute riot of a comedy horror.
She's so good in it as well.
Yeah. And she's brilliant in Utopia. She's great. And she's the one that like elevates that side. But their version of Jessica Hyde is supposed to be this very unsettling person that knows more than this group, but is desperate to keep away from the, you know, the shadowy conspiracy. She's played by Sasha Lane in this, who is, she was in American Honey, if you've watched American Honey, mm-hmm. which was critically acclaimed drama from 2 years ago, maybe. And I, you know, she's good, but she's just like, her Jessica Hyde is, she's just unkempt. It, like, there's nothing about her other than the fact she's not had a shower for weeks, and that's not what I'm looking for in my linchpin. Whereas Jessica Hyde in the UK one is very unsettling. She's kind of got like glassy-eyed stare and very unpredictable. But I think the overall thing about it is aside from like the characters are more layers in the TV show in the UK version, and it's a slightly neater kind of like lining up of the elements.
Okay.
But if you remember, the original version is incredibly stylish. It's shot on a cyan magenta.
I remember a lot of yellow.
Yeah. So it's on a yellow cyan magenta color palette, and all of the yellows are very, very acidic, and it's a, like, all the food people eat are always done in yellow, and there's like the yellow bag that Arby carries around with his hitman stuff in. The skies are like eye-searingly blue and stuff like that. There's no style to the US one at all. It's just a normal TV show. It's not got any of the specific, the shots in the UK one are very, very mathematically precise, like the way that they use rule of thirds and stuff. There's just none of that to this. And originally this was going to be made by David Fincher for HBO.
And like, oh, that would have been good.
If it was a Fincher one, like, I don't want the US remake to look like the British one. It should be its own thing, but what it needs is a distinct style. It can't just look like a TV show. And so the idea of having Fincher behind it would have been very cool, and that would have made it a much colder and grimmer sort of style. Or someone like Noah Hawley, like if you've ever watched Legion or Fargo, he's got a really distinct bonkers style, and that would have been great for this. But it is, it's just a decent TV show.
Just another remake.
Yeah.
There we go.
It's good.
It's good, not great.
Yeah.
So you'd still say watch the original.
Absolutely. Especially because the original is on Amazon Prime. So if you've got the cash for Amazon Prime, just watch the original.
What a glowing recommendation from Matt. shall we play a game?
Yeah. Please. Inside, it's a UK IGN crew. Yeah. Yeah, and the ones and twos. We got the games, gonna play for you. Inside, I got a question for you. Hold tight, the DJ, we coming through. Yeah, and the ones and twos. We got the games, gonna play for you. Inside, I got a question for you. Is it in the search? Do you know what, lads? I enjoyed the game from last week so much that I've decided to do it again. It was from, if you remember, it was from Simon Baisley. So all Simons are good. We've proven that.
All Simons are good. what a conclusion.
There wasn't actually a name for this, though. At the moment, it's just called Item Quiz.
What
do you want to call it?
He gave me a name in the email.
Did he?
Yeah, it was called look at my items,
sorry.
Mate. What's he called? Baisley. Let's have a look.
I'll have a look. Oh, no, it's called Personal Effects.
Effects.
That's a
Look
very good
my
name.
Personal Item Effects. That's the
there
one.
There we go. Apologies, Simon. You are the better Simon. We may all be the best, but you are the better one. So if you don't remember what this game is, I've got five video games here, and I've actually gone for six different items from each of these
you
games.
Little rascal.
I know. And they get increasingly easier, but you get more points the earlier you guess what game these items are from.
Lovely.
It's a simple concept, hopefully. So here we go. The first of these five games. Just let me write down your names so I can score you correctly. Okay, for 6 points then. The first item is a cream-filled cake.
Oh, Bioshock Infinite?
No.
No.
I didn't like how quick that came. Cream-filled cake. I'm going to say... Cooking Mama 2, Dinner with Friends.
No, it is not either of what you said. Do you want the next one?
Yeah.
Okay. Moonbeam Absinthe.
Oh, I feel like I know that. No, it's not going to be.
There's going to be a lot of people screaming.
It's not Spiritfarer.
How's that feel? It's not, no. No, there's going to be some people kicking themselves
shut
here.
Shut up.
Is it Bioshock?
Yes, it is Bioshock. Right.
So I could see the icon for cream-filled cake, but for some reason I saw it in the Infinite
Art
style. I could
see the icon for cream-filled cake.
Sounds like something you'd hear echoing off the walls of a mental institution.
Very Bioshocky. You could have had six there, mate. You should have just gone with, you know, if you say one in a series, go with it.
I was just, you didn't give me any visual indicator that I got it right, half right.
No,
so.
I didn't. You know,
I mean,
that's good.
That's good.
Okay, 5 points to Matt. Here's game number two. Item number one, fire extinguisher.
Dead Rising.
No.
Do you remember Dead Rising? It's good shit, that game.
I play.
There's not many.
It's number two, the one in the shopping mall.
No, number one.
I remember playing that
one.
Oh,
both of them were.
There's the shopping mall on the side of the casinos, isn't there, in two?
Whereas one
is a shopping mall. Well,
yeah,
like one
is
very
just a shopping mall.
Which
Day
one
of the
I
Dead.
To death?
Did you play as a journalist or did you play as a madman with a yellow coat on it?
Two.
A stunt.
Yeah, it was two.
The stunt. Is he a stunt rider? Yeah.
I don't know. It isn't that, though.
No.
Fire extinguisher. Fire
it's not many games where you actually use a fire extinguisher as opposed to shoot a fire extinguisher. And so I don't know whether.
That is, to be very clear, these are all items. I almost went down the wrong path. I'm not going to lie. I almost did Overwatch and started naming weapons. I'm like, they're not items. What are you doing?
No.
Exactly. So item number two from this game is metal detector.
Oh. Shit. Is it Hitman?
No.
Because we had Hitman last time, but there is a fucking game and I can see it now. With a metal detector, and I'm sure it's got a fire extinguisher
with
as well.
With a cream-filled cake!
I can guarantee there is a game with both a fire extinguisher
I'd hope
and a metal detector. And any bits.
Is it Curse of Monkey Island?
No. It's none of the games we had last week.
We
didn't have Curse. Okay. Do you want the next one?
Yeah.
Empty balloon.
Day of the Tentacle?
No.
Maniac Mansion?
No.
Double Fine Adventure Game?
No.
Grim Fandango?
It is Grim Fandango.
Yeah. As soon as you say empty balloon, there's only one company making that.
Was one of the items on that list hosiery?
It wasn't, actually.
I can remember being a kid and getting stuck on a puzzle, and I was reading a walkthrough to figure out how to do it, and I just didn't understand what hosiery was. I was too young to have really...
for a hose?
Well, yeah, exactly. Fucking hours.
I didn't go through the other clues. The other clues for Bioshock, by the way, were Lazarus Vector, Automatic Hack Tool, Audio Diary, and an Adam file. I started off with an easy one. The other ones for Grim Fandango. So do you know when the fire extinguisher is when you have to put out the beaver that is on fire? The metal detector, I think, is like middle of the game where you get that from... Did you get that from the crematorium? I feel like you do. The empty balloon, obviously, you fill with the... You can use it twice, actually. You use it with the birds on the roof and you fill it with the cement stuff.
We get it. You love Grim Fandango.
Sorry. Number four was Maritime Union Card. Then we had the Excelsior Line and Scythe. There we go. So that is... 4 points to Joe. 5-4 to Matt. Okay, here we go. Gold teeth.
Teeth as in multiple.
Yeah.
Gold teeth.
So it's not Curse Monkey, I don't
know. No, it is.
Which is gold tooth singular.
Who got a gold teeth?
Who got gold teeth? any guesses whatsoever?
That should be one.
I'm going for the second one.
Yeah.
The second item is elixir.
Oh, come on. They've all got elixir. That's RPG 101.
Yeah, Final Fantasy's 1 through 16, just in case.
No. Well, it's just narrowing it down what sort of game you might be thinking of. It's all methodical.
That doesn't even make it fantasy RPG.
Like, it could be a sci-fi but it narrows RPG. It down to an RPG. You know, it's not, I don't know, FIFA anymore, don't you? The gold teeth in FIFA.
Adidas Predators. Adidas Long Shoes.
I only know what Predators are.
Mizuno. No, we're not doing FIFA. Anything with an elixir and gold teeth. Anything. No?
No.
Okay, third one. Old Amber.
I don't like you.
It's not Divinity Original Sin 2, is it?
No. Oh. Absolutely every single item in the world's in that game.
I know, right?
About 25,000 on... Gold teeth, elixir, old amber. Next.
Yeah.
Number four, bicycle. Gold teeth, elixir, old amber, bicycle.
I can't account for the first one, but Pokemon Red slash Blue slash Gold slash Silver.
Is. It is that. It is Red, Blue, Yellow Pokemon.
Yeah.
I believe you get the gold teeth. Isn't it to do with the Safari Zone?
Is it?
Yeah.
I don't.
Let me look
that
up and see. This is complete madness. No, it is. Oh, am I? No. Oh, sorry. That may be me. Is that only in Red Leaf and... Sorry, is that only in Leaf Green and Fire?
Well, come on, give it.
That's me making a hideous error, and I shall never trust fandoms wikis ever again. anyway, you're still getting it for Bicycle. The next were Town Map and Sylph Scope. Mm-hmm. 3 points for Joe there. So it's taken a 7-5 lead with two left. It's time. Okay.
That's time.
Item number one of the fourth game. Peach.
Animal Crossing New Horizons.
Now.
Is it an Animal Crossing game?
No.
What about Animal Forest, its original name? Are you being
tricky? There's no animal. There's no animal in the name.
Is it Ring Fit Adventure?
It is not.
That would be great.
Second one. Binoculars.
Binoculars and a peach. What a day out.
Does sound fun, doesn't it?
Is it Breath of the Wild?
No. I mean, if you put binoculars up to a peach, it'll look very furry.
Yeah, okay. there's loads of games with binoculars.
Let's pick a game of binoculars, isn't
it? Mad Max.
No.
Imagine after a whole game of eating maggots and dog food, he gets one juicy peach.
That'd be a great way to end the game.
Yeah.
Are there any games where you play as a bird watcher in Atlanta?
Okay, number three. Valerian Root.
Oh. Valeria.
Game about... me.
Yeah.
My middle name's Valerians, just so people know.
They'll never forget.
You better not.
Valerian Root.
What game? That's a sleeping aid. What do I use a sleeping aid in? I'm bad at this.
A peach. Binoculars and a Valerian Root.
Earthbound?
No. Shall I move on?
Yeah.
Number four, coffee percolator.
What? Gone home.
Nope.
Minecraft?
No. You've got your peach, your binoculars.
I know
your
what
Valerian Root and your coffee percolator. It's a lovely day out.
What remains of Edith Finch?
No.
Just trying to think of games
on.
About normal places.
Number five. Bandana.
We had that last time.
Oh.
Metal Gear.
No. your binoculars, your Valerian root, your coffee percolator, and a bandana. It's like Bullseye. In five, your coffee percolator. Lovely. In five, your bandana. Moving on?
Yeah.
Okay, the final clue. In six, Guama Rum.
Oh, that's Red Dead Redemption 2.
It is Red Dead Redemption 2.
That's
you got your
hard,
peach,
mate.
Your binoculars. Okay.
Valerian root.
Yeah. A coffee percolator. That's a very useful item you should have had. It means you can brew coffee at your campsite whenever you need it.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. Your bandana. Cowboys, come on.
Cowboys.
And your Guama rum.
I don't think of bandanas as a pull up your face rather than a.
Don't you? You don't think they're traditional. Oh, you're too modern for this world.
I'm so modern. I stumbled across. I was looking through my captures on my PS4 the other day, and I stumbled across one from Red Dead that I'd forgotten I got, which is amazing. You know the mission where you're in a hot air balloon? Yeah. And I got a slow-mo shot where I shot a guy off a horse, and then it cut back. And you know it cuts back to Arthur looking down the sights or whatever. My Arthur has this fucking gigantic handlebar moustache.
I think we must have exactly the same clip here, because I've got that
and,
as well.
But because it's cut back to his face while it's in the hot air balloon, it's like he just flies across the camera with this evil look
it's
on his
so
face.
Funny.
It's genuinely like perfect comedy that's been generated by the game. It's so good. Oh, man.
I love that way. I love the slow-mo bits this year.
What
game.
A game.
Anyway, that's a point to Joe. 8-5 with one game left, so...
Come on!
Matt, to level it up, you need this on at least the fourth, okay? Here we go. Clue number one from... I almost said the name of the game. clue number one. Giant ham sandwich.
that's good. Breath of the Wild, just in case. Don't think there's ham in
no.
it.
There should be. All good
recipes,
games should have ham in.
Big recipes.
Not just any ham sandwich, a giant ham sandwich. Yeah. But how big is giant?
Overcooked.
No.
Grounded.
Oh, that
because everything's
really
giant and grounded.
Oh, clever.
That would actually be normal size ham sandwich, though.
Okay, number two. Flashlight. That is flashlight.
I nearly said Alan Wake, but then remembered a giant ham sandwich.
I would love just him shining like on a taken ham sandwich, just trying to burn it away.
Alan looked across the room. He saw a giant ham sandwich, and he'd lost.
That's coming up in the next Control DLC. It's Return of the Ham Sandwich. Anyway, yeah, you've got a ham sandwich and a flashlight.
Is it Broken Age?
Nope. Any takers?
No, I feel like I have to not concentrate on giant ham sandwich.
Number three, dock worker shift card.
Is this Spiritfarer?
No. Oh,
there are dock workers in it.
Is there a giant ham
sandwich? mate, there's tons of recipes.
There could
in that
be.
Dockwork shift card. Deus Ex. In case they've got cyber sandwiches.
No. It's your last chance to win here, Matt. Otherwise, you're going for the draw.
I don't know.
Giant ham sandwich, flashlight, dockworker shift card. You've got 3 seconds.
I can't visualise how big the ham sandwich is. Like, is it just...
Is it? Tears.
So far.
Is it big, is it?
Clip that out. After the cream cake and this, you sound like you've gone fully mad. Like you've had some traumatic experience in a kitchen.
Okay, but having number four.
Oh my god.
You could get it. I'm number four. Nosafed.
Oh.
Oh, Christ.
What's Nosafed in? Fallout 4. 3.
No. for the tie, Matt. This is for the tie, not a fed.
God, what
not
is
a fed
that?
For the tie.
I almost said The Witcher, not because there'd be obviously a fucking flashlight in The Witcher, but that word reminds me a bit like, you know, Fistech, the drug that they take in The Witcher? And so I've got it in my head that Nosatech, is it? Is a drug.
So it's Nosafed.
Yeah, that's what that Nosafed sounds like, a drug.
You're going to kick yourself, I tell you that. This is... I'm giving Matt 5 seconds to tie the game up.
It's just because I keep coming back to the fucking giant ham sandwich. I'm like, this has got to be a comedy game. Like, if it's giant because it's just twice the size of a normal sandwich, which is what a chocolate bar company
would class as a giant.
You're thinking
too much about this. It's something... Okay, I know you've both played this game, and it's something you quite easily could never have seen, because I didn't see it either. okay, we move on to number 5. Right. Yellow gardening gloves.
Untitled Goose Game?
Game? I was going to say Goose Game. Yeah.
This is the problem. This was something that's very clear in my mind about this game, but you might not have even had.
Oh! Is this Disco Elysium?
It is Disco Elysium.
Of course it is. Not so fast.
The health... Giant ham sandwich.
Where the
apparently
fuck
you
is
get that,
that
from? I think you have to do like a legendary skill check with a restaurant owner or something to get that.
Didn't realise there were any restaurants still open.
Or is it like the hotel? I don't know. I'm gonna look that up afterwards. But yeah, you've got your flashlight, your dock worker shift card, Nosafed, yellow garden.
Oh god, fucking course.
And number 6 was the tape player Harmon Walshy WOT.
Yeah. This stopped.
But that is a win for Joe.
Doesn't feel
10
like one.
To 5 there. Well, don't put yourself down. I'm just looking up
the thing
giant
is
sandwich.
about two segments ago, I was thinking that Disco Elysium was going to be in this. But you threw me off with a ham sandwich. I was just imagining like a head-sized ham sandwich.
You get it from Gaston, who is one of the two Patonk players for passing a legendary rhetoric check.
Huh.
There you go.
Well, I threw his ball in the river, so he probably didn't want to talk to me.
And it says, you can equip it, and all it says is the effects are, equip this when times are most dire. So who knows what that does? Probably nothing. What a game that is. I was thinking recently I could go back to Disco Elysium for another run.
I had, for a little while, my morning alarm was the music that plays in the Whirlingham Rags. so that was nice to wake up to. It's the Halo theme tune now.
You treat yourself to a giant ham sandwich. But you know what? First, Joe, read some feedback.
Okay.
That's the question for everyone on feedback. What's the biggest ham sandwich you've ever had? Send that into IGN_UKfeedback@IGN.com.
This is not going to be a new drowning story. Rich Sylvie writes, been with you guys.
I want bigger sandwiches.
He says Duck Hunt. Which is the thing people used to say before even I was on the podcast. Been with you guys since about episode 40, which explains it. I haven't been with us guys since episode 40. My gaming rumor. Oh, this is... Yeah, people. We asked people to send in their gaming rumors that they'd heard that turned out to be true. Oh, no, maybe we didn't ask for true. Anyway, who even cares?
Just good ones. Just good
My
ones.
Gaming rumor dates back to early 1994. I was about to purchase an Atari Jaguar. Proud of my impending purchase, talking to my best mate in our local, he mentioned that Sony, of all companies, would soon be releasing a console that would blow everything else out of the water. This was a company known for Walkmans and other mainly audio devices, so I could simply not believe it, and proceeded to procure my beloved Jaguar. The affair was brief, as I got so excited about the PSX, as it was then, I ended up borrowing, in inverted commas, my mum's credit card, without her knowing, and buying a Japanese import for £700.
Holy shit. How much was £700 in 1994?
And also, yeah, Rich writes quite a lot of money back in 1994. That's a lot of money now! You were insane. I even went out and bought a 29-inch Sony Trinitron, the biggest TV that Curry's, then Dixon's, had on sale. The moment I powered up Ridge Racer, it was all worth it. Anyway, keep up the average Joe job. Lots of love, Rich Sylvie. That is, I mean, like, Yeah, I had the same thing with Microsoft.
I was expecting to know what the repercussions were from that. Like, were you disowned?
Like, sounds like his mum was like,
the credit card.
You've got a big TV and a PlayStation. That's cool as shit. Keep the money.
But yeah, I've never done anything like that.
Have you not?
So yeah, it's on record.
Neither have I. I think I took 20 pence. That's maybe it. Add some sweet.
20 pence. Matt,
right? We've got one from Michael Winter. He says, "Hello, IGN UK podcast gurus." Mm. He loves the podcast. Oh, I'm hoping you can help me with a very important decision: Xbox Series X or PlayStation 5. Some background. I am 35 years old and remember a time when picking your next console was simple. The more bits, the better. E.g., my old console is 32-bit, so the latest console is better because it's 64-bit. I have no clue what teraflops and Zen 2 cores are. I've always been a PlayStation boy, apart from a brief dalliance with the Xbox 360 many years ago. I was pretty confident I would stay faithful to PlayStation going into the next-gen consoles. Xbox Series X is cheaper? Wasn't bothered. It was only slightly more for the PlayStation 5. Is that true? Regardless. Xbox has Season Pass? I was unmoved. I was genuinely could see no way that Xbox could tempt me to Switch, and then they bought my beloved Bethesda. I don't really do online gaming. My favourite most recent games are Skyrim, Fallout 4, Witcher 3, Dragon Age Inquisition, and Divinity 2. Give me a huge world to explore and a half-decent combat system, and that usually has me hooked. If Bethesda games aren't going to be available on PS5, that's a big thing for me. A large chunk of potential next-gen games would be unavailable unless I Switch. I would miss out on all the weird and interesting new bugs their games will undoubtedly have. I suppose my question to you is this true? Would this be true in regards to the exclusives? If I want to play the next chapters of Elder Scrolls and Fallout, has my decision been made for me? Maybe you don't know. It seems that there is mostly speculation. Blah, 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 blah. That's... We're at that question.
Yeah. We kind of half answered this earlier, I think. But in terms of should you buy a PlayStation or Xbox, it's hard to know at the moment, really.
Well, I think, just going off what the games that are listed here, which is Skyrim, Fallout, The Witcher 3, Dragon Age Inquisition, Divinity. They're all on Xbox at the moment. So if some of those games have been PlayStation exclusives, then I'd be like, buy a PlayStation, because we potentially think that these games could come to PlayStation provided the business sense works out. But since they're not there, like, I'm tempted to say, unless there is a PlayStation exclusive you really love, buy an Xbox, because you're going to get all those games on Game Pass. So you're gonna
that is a really good point.
And buy an amazing by console. The games you've listed there as well, you're probably, I'm guessing, looking forward to Cyberpunk, which by all accounts may look slightly better on the Series X. We don't know yet, so we literally haven't touched either of them. So but yeah,
I do wonder if
I would agree with what Matt said.
Yeah, we kind of don't get a good sense necessarily, but like, if you are a single player gamer, I would say PS5 generally will serve you more regularly in terms of exclusives. But if the thing you're after is open worlds, then there is a chance that Series X will run those slightly better. Like, it will be meaningless unless you're analysing that stuff. But
and again, going off those games there, you will eventually have Fable, which it'll sound like you'll enjoy.
Yeah,
so
that is true.
Yeah, there we go. That's my answer currently. But it could change. I have a piece of feedback here from Simran Singh, who says, "Afternoon, lads."
Afternoon.
There we go. Firstly, thank you for all doing an amazing job, all except Joe, who is just doing an okay job.
Fine, whatever.
I'm going to get to the point where you actually scream. please keep this up, Peter. Okay. Secondly, on last week's podcast, when you discussed Morrison's wet eggs, I was surprised by two things. One, wet eggs. That is something to be very perturbed by. And I'm glad we haven't heard anything of it since, because I was horrified. And two, Matt's hatred towards eggs in general. Who doesn't like eggs? Do you not like cake?
What?
What monstrosity is this?
What do you mean, do you not like cake? Cakes aren't eggs, just because they've got eggs in them.
This is the thing. I agree with the idea of Who doesn't like eggs? But the jump to cake makes me on Matt's side. That's bizarre.
Exactly. We've already heard that he's thinking a lot about cream-filled cakes. But no, I'm actually on Matt's side as well here because I don't really like eggs either. Like, scrambled eggs, the only one I really would eat. I don't like boiled eggs or fried eggs.
I tell you what, it's a night... When you've got to... this is me sort of like going, oh, when we... In the old days, when we had to go to America, which was delightful and I fucking loved it. But breakfast in America... breakfast in America is just eggs if you don't want
it's
eggs.
It's not just eggs. Like, Where have you been going?
Everywhere. Like, every dish is eggs.
Just eggs.
Going to just you're going to the cafe that says just eggs.
I can't tell who's more insane, Simran or you. Like, you keep saying bizarre things, both of you. I don't know. You're both wrong. It's just eggs.
Just eggs. But no, I do agree with Matt that I don't like most eggs on their own, but I do eat cake because you're not tasting the egg, are you? It's used to make the cake.
Eggs are fucking amazing. Me and Simran at least can agree on that. Holy shit, they're good.
Anyway, we've got more from Simran, who says, I recently had a discussion with a friend who hates chocolate ice cream.
Was that from me? I don't like chocolate ice cream.
You don't like chocolate ice
right,
cream?
No. Now you can say, do you not like cake? Because they're similar flavour profiles.
What? Cake to ice cream?
They're both incredibly sweet items, is my point.
Yeah. I mean, I like chocolate ice cream, but it's not, you know, I'm never normally picking it. Compared to other places.
Because there are better ice creams, way better ice creams than chocolate ice cream.
Yeah, but there's a difference.
But you don't hate it,
exactly.
Do you?
There's a difference between not liking chocolate ice cream and liking other ice creams better. Have you got like some bizarre like algorithm in your head where you're just like, well, this is good. So similar products, shit house, right down.
Yeah. It's all you get in America is eggs and chocolate ice cream.
Wait, is the reason you don't like eggs because you like chicken so much and you've had to push them all the way down? They're on a spectrum of taste.
I don't know where
you can't have one without the other. What's going on? Anyway, but then I started thinking about normally loved foods that I hate. For example, I could understand a hatred for coffee and broccoli, but while peas are a commonly loved food ingredient, I absolutely hate them. If mushy peas touched my fish and chips, I would consider it a meal ruined. This got me wondering, are there any food items or ingredients that aren't usually hated that you absolutely despise?
Cucumber.
Yeah. I don't mind cucumber. The one for me is sweet corn.
Really?
I hate sweet corn.
That's my favourite.
And it's pointless as well. So what's the point?
Cucumber. I'm genuinely convinced I have some sort of genetic thing where I taste cucumber differently to other people because everyone tells me it tastes like nothing. If a cucumber touches
it
any...
It absolutely does taste of something.
But to me, if a cucumber touches any other element of a meal, it will taste of cucumber, and I hate the taste, and it makes me furious.
Oh, dear.
I have a similar thing to that. Like, I remember buying, like, a chicken Caesar wrap once from Sainsbury's, who sneak a piece of cucumber into that. It's only, like, one round of it. Entire thing is ruined. That has... It's got such a strong flavour profile.
Yes, yes, yes.
Just wet mush.
I don't like bananas. That's more of a texture thing. I don't hate banana-flavoured things as much. It's more the texture of a banana. Anymore. Oh, I don't mind cardamom in things, but biting on a cardamom pod is the worst thing in the world. It just tastes like pure soap. I hate it.
But that's not... You're not supposed to eat them, are you?
No, but they leave... A lot of places leave them in the rice and don't take them out. So it can accidentally happen, Matt.
This isn't answering Simran's question, though, with things that aren't usually hated. Don't think anybody's going, oh, you
sweet corn is one.
Chew
sweet
on a cardamom.
Like sweet corn. I don't like sweet corn.
Good for you.
There we go. Tuna. I don't like tuna.
No.
I love salmon, though, so what's the, you know.
Also in the bin.
Do you actually like any
what,
foods,
salmon?
Matt?
I love loads of foods.
Cream-filled
cakes and giant ham. Giant ham sandwiches.
I will only eat them if they're giant.
And don't go to America, because all they have is eggs. Right. Anyway, please, people, let us know, common foods that you hate. I don't know. Let's find out more
of
those.
Have you eaten a giant
and
ham
B,
sandwich?
Exactly. Tell us your biggest sandwich stories.
That's fine with me. Biggest sandwich in general. Not ham, not limited to ham, yeah. Biggest sandwich.
Because people have made, I remember at uni, people were making all concoctions of like full-on sandwiches and full baguettes and stuff. Yeah. Just like absolute mad things that you wouldn't actually eat.
We made one of my friends for his birthday, a meat cake, where we made giant burgers in cake tins. And then the icing was mashed potato. And the writing on top was ketchup, and we decorated it with peas. And it was delicious for a day, and then it went rotten, and it sat in a student house on a table for about a week. And it was one of the grimmest looking things I've ever seen, but technically sort of a meat sandwich, just putting it out there. Giant meat sandwich.
There we go. Something of uni creations, I once made a cocktail, a very loose definition of a cocktail here, called Semaphore, namely because I think we had University Challenge on at the time, and someone just shouted Semaphore on it, so I was making a drink at the time, so it was called Semaphore, and I didn't have any bowls or any big cups that weren't clean, so it was made in a saucepan, it was mixed in a saucepan, and it was just cheap whiskey, Coke, and vanilla crusher.
Oh my god. Actually sounds...
It just tasted like vanilla Coke.
To be honest, that sounds all right. I could do that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very nice. But that is Semaphore. No. Anyway, this is going on. Should we have some Hades music?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Go on.
Bye.
Hello, dear stranger. I'd like to introduce you to something new, or perhaps something very, very old. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine is a horror fantasy medical mystery following the titular monk turned traveling medical investigator. Follow Radolf as he navigates a nightmare world in which viruses are gods and the human race are not their favored children. Steeped in history and an aesthetic that can only be described as a combination of occult academia and laboratory Judaica, the Heresies of Radolf Burntwine have been described as Umberto Eco meets H.P. Lovecraft. For more information, check out the Patreon at thorb.info. But take care, dear stranger, for some truths are best left unknown.